Hey, wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 309 of the JV Club with my guest, Vera Sola. I very much encourage you to check out her music, as indeed I very much encourage you to enjoy this episode that we did together. We had a great time. Hope everyone is doing well. I will talk to you soon. Okay, listen, first of all, I'm going to say you are very backlit, so there's a lot of mystery to happening right now. I feel that I'm very brightly lit, but in this kind of mysterious...
Is there a secret camera?
There is absolutely not a secret... What if I didn't tell you? I'm sorry. Yes, there is. There's cameras the everywhere. Oh, really?
Yeah, they were like, and I was like, is this going to be filmed? Yeah. They're like, oh, no, absolutely not. And I showed up. This
as you would feel comfortable and willing. Oh no, that's a rude awakening.
It was terrible. I saw the photos later.
Did you at what point do you get to go like, I mean
at this point in my career I never really do.
You know, you just kind of go like okay, sounds good. Yeah. I think there was a certain point too which I don't know exactly when it was, but there was a point at which I just stopped being so critical because there was just sort of enough out there. Like,
yeah,
it was like, oh, I take so many pictures with just like some nice person, like at a con where the lighting is horrible.
Yeah.
That I just had to go like, give it to God. Like if you believe in God or whatever that means. But there was just a certain point I was like, all right, I'm going to feel like I look pretty gross, like a lot of the time. And, I guess that's the downside of people wanting to take pictures with you, but that's not a big downside.
I mean, for me, it's that there's never, I mean, one in 1,000 photographs of someone singing, no matter how beautiful they are, is good.
Ditto.
I mean, I look like a gargoyle anytime or worse.
I'm always like, what's happening to all my vocal? Like, what a thick, what's happening?
The neck.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. Especially if you're up on a stage and someone's shooting at you, there's just a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot. You can either become kind of the most vain person and just agonize over that stuff, or it can like humble you quickly and just make you go like, you know what? Once in a while, I'll be able to choose a picture and I'm going to be real careful when that happens.
Yep.
The rest of the time, here's every angle of my body from every
angle.
The worst
angle.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Now, how long have you been in LA? You're not originally from here, right?
Born here.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Grew up here till I was 8, and then I moved to New York and did my formative years half in New York City and then half in Canada.
Right on.
Where my family, my dad's family's from.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Where in Canada?
Like it's Toronto, Kingston, or? Ontario. It's halfway between Toronto and Montreal.
How big of a metropolitan area is it?
It's a college town.
Okay.
But we lived in a farm like away from everything, this farm that's been in my family for generations, and I had one friend, and that's that.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And
but you
far,
were splitting time, yeah?
Yeah, it was, we were in New York for
talk
all,
about
any time we were in school.
Vastly different environments.
Oh, yeah. And it was sort of architectured that way, in the sense that, well, my father hated New York City. Sort of suffered it because we ended up in good schools there. And then the second we'd get out, it'd be like everybody pile into the car and we'd drive up to Canada.
Right.
And then I never went to like camps or like did fun things with my friends when I was off school. I was just like alone in this log cabin in Canada and had one friend, truly.
Yeah. How far away was your one friend?
Across the lake.
I mean, that's very, let's not pretend like that's not very Anne of Green Gables. For those of us who did not have that childhood, it sounds very like, oh, was Diana living right across the lake, Anne of Green Gables?
I mean, that's kind of what it was, yeah, but also like with great debauchery and like ridiculous, mostly on our side. I mean, it's me and my three sisters and the other family, the only other family that we were able to befriend because we were so weird. We're also three sisters, and they were always more tempered and measured, and they're all wonderful people now, and they work in like engineering, like the Doctors Without Borders, and we were just complete chaos. Uh-huh. And they just basically came over to watch the chaos like TV.
Right.
And then we'd shoot them back across the lake in a canoe with a light.
Yeah. That's amazing. Was it really as, now I'm trying to turn it into a young adult book, but like, or maybe an adult book, depending on how bad the debauchery
was. Adult.
Okay, great. Was it really like, were you similar ages? Was it sort of like,
exactly.
I paired off with this one, I paired off with this one.
Exactly.
That's
that.
So
yeah.
funny. And that was their place also kind of like, oh, this has been in the family forever? Or were they sort of new to that?
No, their place was, their grandmother, their family was well established in that, in the town. They owned like the fish company where you would buy the fish.
And what was the, and so the place that has been in your family for years, it was a full on farm or was it sort of just a property?
At certain points it was a full on farm and now it's basically, agricultural farm. I mean, like there's a dude on a tractor who comes and mows the alfalfa and then we give it to the farmers and that's about it.
Got it.
And we've had animals and stuff there, but now it's kind of fallen into like House of Usher style disrepair. So
I mean, sounds like someone needs to film a movie there as soon as possible.
I made a music video.
Let's go. There it is.
Yeah.
Gotta take advantage. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like was there a sense of one environment suited you more than the other, or did you almost feel like there were two of you in a sense where this is the version of me that
I was a New York City kid.
You really were,
100%, and was really pissed when I was in Canada. I mean, there was one or a couple of summers where I just refused, even though the lake is really beautiful and like the perfect swimming water. My father still brings this up to me that like there were like two or three summers where just out of spite, I refused to go swimming, even when it was like 100 degrees, just to purely to spite him.
Yeah. If I let you see me enjoying this for a second, my point will be lost.
So
my protest will be lost.
Exactly. So I spent basically all night when I was up there on dial up, I'd unhook the family phone and then plug in the computer and then go in chat rooms.
Uh-huh.
That was that.
No one understands but you, internet.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, is that it's funny because I definitely went through a phase in like probably high school where I just, because I was goth, like I would be traveling, like I would go to the beach. I mean, I'm from Arizona, but like driving across into California to visit family and being at a beach and like those pictures of me from those years, I am in like full I rolled my black pants up.
Same.
And that was like the only difference. No bathing suit.
Same. I mean, I too was goth.
Excellent.
And traveling
my
goth
sister
is one of the best goths. I actually don't have, when I was trying to find pictures, the only picture I was able to find for you is online because my mom had everything scrubbed from like from the time I was 13 to 18 because I horrified her so much.
Oh,
and I was like the family
shame. You don't
shame.
Get to do that. I mean, I guess she did get to because she did it. But
there was one I did find and I tried to send it, but it didn't work, which is me at a monastery in India. We went on a family trip to India.
Oh, boy.
And it is, and I've climbed a tree because I've always been into like, I love climbing things. But like,
well, that's not very New York City, at least.
Oh no, it is because because you'd climb scaffolding and you'd climb like, the
enough.
Sides of buildings.
Fair
and,
enough.
And
yeah,
all
fire
that
escapes.
Stuff.
Good point.
Fire escapes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, got me in this horrible haircut. Cause of course, I cut my own hair and dyed it all and whatever in a ridiculous outfit in a tree. In this like beautiful setting, there's also an amazing photo of me somewhere at the Taj Mahal, with my infected lip ring and like a
perfect.
Oh, it was so good. And then that was also around the time that I actually made my parents cry with the color of my hair. And I did that in Canada because I have this dark hair which never took to bleaching.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And so I would dye it black, but then I decided that like I wanted something else. And so I had my one friend in Canada help me bleach my hair so I could dye it like bright blue.
Okay,
yeah. But what happened instead is that I bleached it and it turned orange and then I put the blue on top. And so it became like a mix of like, It was like a calico green and orange print.
It's actually easy for me to picture because I've gone through stuff like that. Uh-huh. And also just like when you paint, if you ever paint, there are these colors that come where you're like, oh, this is a non-color.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
just a mess.
It was terrible. Yeah. It was like a swamp.
And your parents cried.
And then I came down the stairs. This was the first time my dad had weathered so much. Like even when I got my horrible tattoos, he was like, okay, well, it's a Sylvia Plath poem, but at least it's not a My Little Pony on your forehead. But so he really took, he was like, he took it well, but that was like too much.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a picture of me at the Taj Mahal in with like on the family vacation with that hair, the infected lip ring.
Oh,
and then
God.
The other good thing about that is that my mom was always trying to make me look beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that she could, which has benefited me now because I haven't changed much in size. And so she'd buy me like really nice clothes.
Oh, and you're finally ready to go like, and, no, hey.
Yeah, so now I wear them.
Yeah.
But before I was like, oh my God, no.
Right.
But she'd do anything to make me like she wants. Oh God. Well, I'll finish this story and then I'll tell the next one, which is really funny. But we had a friend who was a dentist. And she was like, why don't you come with me? I'm going to get, this was when teeth whitening was like, it had just come out.
Right. It was like a miracle. Especially for people of a slightly older generation who didn't have the benefit of like the kind of dental care we have.
Yep.
So the idea that you could like bleach out your teeth probably seemed like, without it necessarily looking like full on dentures, was just like,
it was
holy
a huge
shit,
deal.
What is this? Yeah.
And so she was like, wow, maybe this is a way to get her to look pretty. And so she took me to get my teeth bleached. But of course, I was a chain smoker and an insane coffee drinker. And like, not only did I smoke, I would smoke anything. Like I would smoke like things I found on the street.
Uh-huh.
I smoked like backwoods cigars. I smoked Black and Mild. I smoked everything.
God.
I was like completely addicted to weed. And so I couldn't go, however, like a week.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Because
smoking.
You're not supposed to, yeah.
So mm-hmm. They would only bleach the front of your teeth. And I started smoking the second I got out of the tooth bleaching.
When your enamel is the most vulnerable to retinting.
Exactly.
I'm sure. Yeah.
And my teeth went brown.
Oh, God.
Like a shade of brown you've never seen, to the point that then people in school were
God.
Like, what's up with your teeth? Like, these ones back here, like, kind of white. Because also, I didn't really need the whitening in the first place.
Right.
So I was like, these ones are, like, kind of nice. What's up with the front four?
Oh, Jesus.
So there's one of me, and, like, I never smiled in photos, but for some reason, my mouth is open.
Uh-huh.
And I have brown teeth, an infected lip ring, which I pierced myself, like, calico hair. And just the worst outfit, which I tried a little bit, and I like put on a vaguely ethnic shirt to like kind of fit in.
Blending right in.
But people were really, they didn't know what to do with me there. I actually had like a lot of people touching me and like looking at me. I don't know what they...
They probably felt sorry for you.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
This poor creature?
Yeah, what is it?
Oh.
But the other classic great story is that I used to cut my hair and dye it and do all this stuff. And so my mom... tried to get it was terrible. I mean, at first it was a mohawk, but that never stuck, and I like kept tried to put it up, but I was never good at it.
Right.
Like, I wasn't like one of those like really great MySpace scene kids who had the amazing hair.
Yeah,
I was not good at any of the stuff that I tried to do.
Uh-huh.
So I had this like really sad, and I didn't believe really in hairspray because it was like the real punks used glue.
Right.
And so it was like this wilted
right.
Elmer's glue thing. And then that became clear that was unsustainable. So then I like kind of grew it out. And then I started cutting it myself because all I wanted was to look like Brody Dahl from The Distillers.
Okay, yeah.
That's all I wanted. I looked nothing like her.
Uh-huh.
There was no chance that I was ever going to look like her. And so I tried to cut my hair. She got a new haircut after she did her mohawk differently and grew it out. And I tried to do that, but instead it just became a bowl cut. Because my hair is so thick and it was so bad. So my mom was really upset about that. And so she like got me an appointment at a really nice salon trying to make me look beautiful. But she didn't come with me to the salon.
Oh.
So of course I went in and just had my hair very expensively styled in a horrible way, which is That was, yeah.
Now,
was
what that. Did this, okay, so when she, it was styled in an incredibly horrible way, mm-hmm. what did that, what was parts, the shape of it?
Parts
was it,
were so, shaved, yeah. and, yeah. But not, like, cool how people do it. Some people can pull it off.
Right.
I could never, ever pull any of that stuff off.
Yeah.
I have a weird shaped skull.
This is the stuff, like, you find out. A lot yeah. of us don't know how weird our skull. I do know because yeah. I also have done those things. But yeah, you don't know until you know.
No, and then you're like, a reason oh, really
this is really
hair.
Bumpy. Like, yeah. I guess it is a big deal that Sinead O'Connor's head was so perfect. Like,
it's a huge
at
deal.
At the time, I thought anyone would look like that with shaved heads.
No.
Not true.
It also emphasizes, like, all of the parts of your face that, you know, aren't necessarily great.
Right.
So, and when you're a teenager,
yeah, you
that's
can't get away from
part.
It. You're not hiding from anything. That's no. for sure.
Yeah, so there's, like, some shaved parts and some really ugly pink dye, and still the same sort of generalized bowl cut.
Was there ever a point at which, I mean, I know you have the kind of the hindsight now, but even at the time, was there ever a point at which you were like, nailed it? Or did oh. you always have a feeling of like, ugh, Conan?
No. There? I thought I was
you
just
did
killing it.
Oh, great. Okay.
I mean, like, yes, I was frustrated when the mohawk wouldn't stay up.
Yeah.
And I was jealous of those who could really achieve what I wanted to achieve.
Right.
But I definitely walked out of the house in some things that I was just like, here it is. Today is the best day.
Yeah.
And I remember being, I mean, growing up in New York, they, like, people yell stuff at you. So
oh,
I'd
sure
get,
they
like,
do.
Like, you know, like, it ain't Halloween, bitch. And I'd be like, yes.
Success.
Yes.
Now, how does this compare with your other two sisters? Like, did they go through other phases? Or
oh, no.
were you the sort
I
of
was
like,
the one.
You were the one that your mom was like, well, I know this isn't normal for our family.
No.
So if I just am very hands on, maybe.
Well, she did everything
to.
Wrong. God bless her. And
how exhausting for her
it must
to be
been,
like, I've got to give this my full attention. Like, I'm not, I refuse to just let her go through this.
Which only made it worse.
Right.
Because the more attention she put on it, the more I rebelled.
Yeah.
And so she made every mistake with me, and my other sisters grew up like relative, like they're, we're weirdos. All the whole family's freaking weird.
Yeah.
But, they're like my younger, both of my younger sisters just like, I didn't go through any of this. and you know, all, I mean, I was grounded from the moment I turned like 12 and a half. Until I went to college.
Oh, God.
They alarmed the doors on
my
house.
Oh, my. Oh, so you really were. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You were a
I was
wild
grounded.
Child.
But I cut the wires on the alarms and
this
got
is very
out.
Impressive.
Yeah, I was amazing.
You could have a second career as a cat burglar.
Oh, sure. For sure. I had I had to sneak out.
You do like to climb things.
I love to climb
you can
things.
Cut wires.
I had a whole collection of wigs and this whole thing so that I could sneak out of the house because I was constantly grounded.
Yeah.
And there was no barometer for... like what behavior was bad.
Uh-huh.
So it was like, it was just as, my mom had no idea what she was doing. So she'd ground me for like leaving the drawer open to my t-shirts.
Yeah.
I'd be grounded just as badly as if I like stayed away. Okay. I like left for 2 days and didn't come home.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, well I'm already grounded for not
right.
like leaving the t-shirts out. So I might as well just
yeah,
like,
if it's a level playing field, it's like, I might as well shoot up heroin
exactly.
as if I'm going to get in
totally.
Trouble for not making my bed.
Totally. That's exactly
yeah, yeah.
what it was.
Was she a young mom? Was
no.
she like, she just
no, she
didn't
just
know what
no
she was doing.
Idea what was going on uh-huh. in this child. And it was the complete opposite of her. I mean, she's like a Southern beauty queen and with like, so like very sweet and just could never imagine that this would happen to her.
Did it feel like it was relative to your parents' behavior or the way they were and behaved? Or did it feel like it was something more internalized or more like organic to your environment?
It was a combination of both. I mean, I was born angry. Like, like pictures of me as a child, I hated having my picture taken. I was just like born like sort of pissed.
Yeah.
That pissed at the state of the world. And also like I was very... old as a kid.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I was
yeah, yeah.
like angry that I was in a child's body uh-huh. and angry that I was like forced to hang out with kids.
Uh-huh.
Like one of my least favorite things is people are like, oh, you're 5 and she's 5. Like you guys should hang out. I mean, it's the same thing as like if now you're like, oh, like she's 30, you're 30. Like you guys would get
you're
along
gonna have
great.
So much in common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
not at all. I never wanted to hang out with other kids. I was mad about it. I was mad about like being treated like a child.
Was there a group that you felt like, now these are my people? Or was, you know what I mean? Did you feel more comfortable with your parents' friends? Or was there any kind of like example of...
As a kid, I was very, as a very small child, I was very much in my head and I created a lot of worlds. And I had some friends who like sort of lived in those worlds with me. But then once we moved to New York, I had one best friend for, you know, like middle school, elementary school, and that was a tumultuous relationship that was wonderful, ultimately wonderful and painful. And,
I've been there.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And then high school was hilarious and awesome, and I sort of ran with a group of delinquent boys and was like the only girl in this group of sort of like urban exploring, like, I don't know.
Was it a public high school in New York?
I was so lucky. First, my parents put me in Catholic school, and that was obviously a disaster. And they, at a certain point, when the lip ring happened, and like I started altering my uniform, they were like, "We think you should probably find another place to go to school."
And the school was.
The school said that. Yeah. And I was failing all of my classes, which is not like me. I mean, I like school and I've always liked like learning, and I'm, you know, like, I don't know, I never did homework, but I was good at tests. And so I was really lucky. I found an amazing sort of art school in Brooklyn that basically saved my life. And so I ended up going there for ninth grade through the end of high school, and that was great.
It really is like there's your sort of perfect textbook example of like, okay, so you've got this sort of unruly kid, or you've got this kid who seems angry, rebelling, whatever is being represented externally and internally, the ways you go of sort of like, well, let's push her over into the sort of like right, clean cut Catholic school, like that's gonna snap her into shape.
Yep.
And then that doesn't work, and then you go to the opposite thinking like, oh, I don't know how this is gonna be good for her to go someplace that's like more, you know, open minded and all that kind of stuff, and then it's like, oh wait, that was the right
totally, you know? I mean, they accepted me, and they were exasperated, the school. I mean, I was the only person. It was this amazing. It had no grades, and only the teachers would write these reports, and you'd choose your own curriculum, and there really wasn't much. It was your own structure. You built your own structure. Yeah. But I was one of the only people in the history of the school, I'm pretty sure, to actually have an attendance report sent home, which I still have, which has beautifully all of my excuses for the reasons that I missed class, which are just amazing fabrication. Fabrication. My horse is sick.
Oh,
is one of them. Like on, like I missed I missed math because my horse got sick. Like, okay, Danielle. Okay, yeah.
And so, first of all, I'm assuming you didn't have a horse.
Actually, I did, but that's a different story. That's a different story. It wasn't nearby and it wasn't sick.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Hey everyone, it's John Roderick from the Friendly Fire Podcast, here with Adam Pranica and Ben Harrison.
When was the last time you really liked watching a war film? With Friendly Fire, you get to do it with us.
Yeah. You don't even necessarily have to have seen the movie to get a lot out of an episode of Friendly Fire.
In many cases, we would recommend that you not watch the movie because there are some really, really bad war movies. But a bad war movie makes a great war movie podcast.
And in all cases, we recommend you listen to our show. So subscribe and download to Friendly Fire wherever you get your podcasts.
To the victor, go the spoiler alerts.
What were the things that you did kind of lean into at the school that you could choose and kind of build for yourself?
I've always loved reading. So I loved my English classes, and I loved science, and I loved everything. Performing really was great for me. Theater, art. I loved my art classes. I'm still in touch with all of my painting teachers and all of that. It was amazing. But it was like a full liberal arts college, but in the form of a high school.
That's great.
It was fantastic.
That's, and I guess I don't, I know a lot of people who excelled in one portion or two portions of the of fine arts, but I don't, there's, I don't have a lot of, it's weird. I mean, this is just like a, I don't think this is like a, it says anything real. It's probably just a coincidence, but I don't have very many people who were performers and also fine artists. Like, it seemed like there were sort of people who excelled at playing music and performing in some way, or what have you. And then my other friends who sort of maybe dabble in that, but like they really excelled in kind of more like tactile visual arts and stuff. So the idea of being one of those people that can kind of do a little of all of that is so attractive to me.
It's for me that that's why I really love what I'm doing now, is because it's an, it's a, you know, what's the word am I thinking of? Sort of a synthesis of everything that I love to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the tactile, I make all my own flyers and do collages and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And then I make my outfits, my stage outfits, and I make my videos and I make my music, and then I perform theatrically on stage. So it's everything.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Did you had you had the experience of making music collaboratively with people as well? Or has it kind of always been like, this is my expression and I sort of take, I control each part of it?
I was a secret musician through all of high school. I never played music in high school, and I only started, or I did play music, but I played it in my bedroom, and I did that all the way through college and after college. And it wasn't until like 2 or 3 years after college that I started playing music with other people.
Mm.
And then even then didn't even think about releasing my own stuff until February 2017.
Oh, yeah.
So all of that is really new for me.
Yeah.
And still like wild and yeah, strange.
I want to go back to the Canadian lake debauchery for a second.
Yeah.
I don't want to leave that behind.
Okay.
What kind of trouble were you guys getting up to in that sort of remote place?
Well, we were very isolated. I don't know where my parents were. Because there's
I feel like a lot of us have those where we're like, I don't think they would have wanted me to be doing what I was doing, yet where were they?
Where were
if they didn't want me to?
I mean, the worst, oh my God, what are the worst ones? Well, it's like, to give you a classic story about what my mom thought of me, there was one time my parents did go out to dinner, and while they were gone, my sisters and I did something with water. Oh, that's a story. but this is the origin of it, with water balloons, where we like filled up water balloons with like red food dye. I have no idea what that was about. And then my mom came home, and I guess I was sitting at the kitchen table, and there was like red food dye all over the floor. And my mom went, the children? Oh, where are the children?
Oh my God.
I was like, Mom, I didn't kill them.
Oh,
are
no.
you kidding me? That's food
oh,
dye.
No.
Jesus. But we, that reminds me. So we would play just endless pranks and not really.
How much, sorry to interrupt, but how much older are you than?
We're an equal 3.5 spread between
Got it.
Yeah. But that reminds me, we would do these pranks, and I guess it was mostly on my mom, because I don't know.
She sounds like she would have the biggest reaction, which when you're a kid, you're like, I mean, that's what you want.
So one great one was we got a whole bunch of water balloons and filled up as many rooms in the house as we could, like closets, and particularly like this one bathroom that we sort of all share, which has like a bathtub and a shower, with water balloons to your knees.
Oh my.
And like put even like giant water balloons in all the toilets.
Oh, that's really satisfying.
It was great. Yeah. I don't remember how that ended though. It couldn't have been good. The house is, like said, a log cabin. It's made of wood. And there's no way that ended well, but I must have blacked it out, because I'm sure I got in so much trouble.
I would imagine that's the case.
But
who's obtaining all these water balloons?
I don't know how we got all that stuff.
Yeah.
Another one, my younger sister once covered herself entirely in Vaseline and went sliming around the house. And as you may know, Vaseline is...
That's very oily.
Oil-based.
Definitely leaves
so you
all kinds of stains and marks.
And you can't wash it off.
Yeah, yeah. It just kind of slimes there.
It slimes there.
Until gradually, like,
ever.
It wears down.
I mean, and that's the thing about the
onto
house.
Onto something
like,
else.
Yeah. So that was a really good one. Oh, man. I mean, the really classic one is one time. So we had this one family that we were friends with, the Murphy family. Hi, Murphys.
Hi, Murphys.
I will definitely tell them to listen to this because they will love this. And I decided that it was time for us to branch out and make new friends. And so what we were going to do is we were going to make a poster, a wanted poster for Friends. So
wonderful.
Yeah. So I got out a bunch of collage materials and we got some art supplies going. And I put some music on. Again, this is one of those nights where the hell were my parents?
Right.
And we were all there. And at some point, I don't know, what am I, about 15? At some point, I decided it'd be a good idea to just pop a couple of Ambien. And that, so
sure.
The last thing I remember is trying to make this collage thing. And then that's the big problem. Popping a couple of Ambien and then having like a couple of swigs of Smirnoff Ice.
Yeah, hot. Really,
super hot, super cool. Yeah. I'm hanging out with my two younger sisters and our three friends. Really awesome. And it was supposed to be like looking for new friends. But then at some point, the last thing I remember is like going to get a Neutral Milk Hotel CD to play for my friend because I had to play it for her.
Of course, classic.
And then I wake up, I don't know, 15 hours later in completely different clothes, covered in blood.
Whoa.
And I'm like, whoa, what happened?
Yeah.
And I was like on my parents' room, there's a little couch. And I was just lying on there. I was like, ah, weird. Like, what am I doing here? And then I sauntered downstairs, totally cool. And I was like, hey, guys.
Did you wipe off the blood?
I was like, wait, guys, like, what am I doing up here? And they were like, oh, my God, you don't remember any of that?
Oh, my God.
And I went into, like, full.
You really had one of those crazy, like, Ambien fugue states.
Totally. It was a fugue state. I've never blacked out from drinking. I was, like, I did, like, tons of drugs and drank a lot. And I've never blacked out from drinking, never blacked out from anything. This was the only time. But I did so many things that night. I tried to reorganize my closet, which ended up with me throwing all of my clothes onto the ground. Evidently, at one point, I like fell, and they like came all these. These are like we're children,
yeah,
trying to,
yeah,
take care of me.
Yeah.
And I fell down on the ground, and they said, "Like, are you okay? Are you okay?" And I said, "Harry Potter revealed himself to me." They were like, "What? What are you talking about? What are you doing on the ground?" And I was like, "Allegedly, again, I was not there.
Yeah.
I don't remember any of this.
Yeah,
I'm slithering like a snake.
Oh my God,
slithering." Did a whole Harry Potter bit.
Must have been a crowd pleaser if they were.
I mean,
Harry Potter.
It's talked about to this day. They had to, at one point, yeah, I fell and busted my chin open. They had to shower me. That was a disaster. You can imagine. Where were my parents? I know. I still have a scar under my chin from that. So those are the kinds of things. But then the best part is that looking at the poster that I made that night is just like a bunch of really horribly sort of like cut out Archie comic pieces. And then it just says in scrawl, "Friends, arrow, no."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, all right.
It's great.
Otherwise known as Exhibit A.
Exhibit
if things
A.
had gone more poorly than
yeah,
you think,
I'd be
that they
I should
already
have been
did.
In jail.
Oh, God. And everyone laughs about it now. Like that.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, it was funny in the moment, too.
Yeah,
Also, like, I just, like, busted my chin up, and I didn't hurt anybody. I was, you know.
Were your parents home by the time you woke up on their couch?
No. I don't know where they were.
This is a real mystery.
It's a real mystery.
There's a whole other series of adventures going on in your parents' lives.
Maybe they were doing the same thing.
Right?
Yeah.
They blacked out somewhere after popping a couple of Ambien.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yeah, that's the next question is like, you know, it sounds like you were an opportunity user as a teenager, which
I
sort of was too, which was like, whatever's around, like, use what you got. Yeah. I mean, I did never like, I don't think I ever did like whippets, but.
Oh no, I did whippets. Yeah. I did whippets way too late. yeah. But I otherwise, no, I mean, I didn't actually, I was lucky in that I never touched heroin because my dad lost a lot of friends to that. And yeah. Now I've lost a lot of friends to it. I was lucky. I like sort of was in this time when it wasn't really around. And if it was, it wasn't like a big thing.
Yeah.
But otherwise I, yeah, I mean, I was just a disaster, but I had, but it was fun and yeah. I didn't get hurt. And I was really lucky.
Yeah. There is that,
like,
yeah.
Totally boring and sober. I don't even drink, and it's not even out of like AA or anything. I just don't.
Yeah,
I did it all. I'm bored.
I completely relate. Yeah. Anybody yeah. who listens to the podcast regularly knows I experience very much the same thing. And yeah, I'm wondering if there was sort of a gradual decline, or if there was more of a sense of immediacy of like, ugh, I'm over it.
No, it was a gradual decline. Yeah. it was a gradual decline. And then eventually I discovered that I was like sort of allergic to alcohol, and it was like, oh, like that's why I'm like kind of fat and swollen and like feel like shit all the time.
Yeah.
And so I stopped drinking, but yeah, no. And then I just like don't really like, I did it. I don't need to do that anymore.
Yeah. How much of music for you involves live gigs versus like composing at home and recording or recording in a studio?
Now it's mostly live. Yeah. And that's awesome. I mean, I'm recording some acoustic stuff for the Content Machine have tons of stuff that I need to start demoing to get another record, get it together. But right now it's really live. Which is awesome.
Yeah. Do you feel like there's a through line between the music that you were secretly doing when you were in high school? You know, because some people do that thing where they're like, first I tried this and then I didn't know what my sound was, or it didn't feel like me. It felt like I was trying to be someone else. And then I found it. But then some people sort of feel like if there's a natural kind of growth into.
I mean, I feel like the music that I make now is also, again, also a synthesis of everything that I've ever loved and ever listened to. I mean, there's definitely like a heavy... sort of punk element to it, but I also listen to a lot of sort of like really depressing, sweeping, romantic classical music.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point got really into like very deep, raw blues stuff, and folk music.
Yeah.
And so like that,
all of those things, kind of
come together in what I do. And it's amazing. It's really fun when I have friends come who have known me forever to say like, this is awesome because this is exactly like you, just sort of like writ large.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all the things you described too are definitely things that were very important to me. And I think that really they're as different as one might be from another, like the rawness of a connection from emotion to music is very much there, opposed to necessary, you know, there's other kinds of music where it feels more that it's about the, you know, the technique, or it's about the orchestration, or it's about the lyrics. But like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not criticizing overly like the Bob Dylans of the world, because many people feel that he's a pure musician. But for someone like me, like I wanted to feel more like I needed more something from certain types of music. But your music is very immersive. Like, you sort of listen to it. It's not necessarily music that I would just be like, I'm going to clean the house. Yeah, not to say that that would be a bad thing, but that is not the experience I have with it, versus like, you know, throw on some 07. You can pretty much do anything and be like, I'm enjoying this.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. What was that last song? I've already forgotten what just played.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was everything I've ever loved. And well, that's not true. I mean, there's a lot of influence on there that I didn't even, that sort of squeaked in, of things that were like higher production value. I mean, one, when I was finishing the record, the engineer who I was working with said, you know, I wouldn't have told you this at the beginning, but have you noticed that the background vocals on that song are kind of similar to Coolio's Gangsta's Paradise?
Oh, wow.
And I was like, that makes sense. That was my favorite song when I was nine.
Right.
Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, and I'll find these things, and I'll sometimes hear a song that I was listening to when I was 15, and I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
that's where that influence came from.
Well, that's that I think, yeah, there's absolutely that sort of memory bank of stuff that sort of seeps in and then gets all mixed together. And then, like, whether it ever comes back out again, who knows?
Yeah.
From an artistic point of view. Did you see a lot of live stuff when you were?
I did lot more than I did. Than I do now, actually, which is sad. And I've made it a resolution to go out to more stuff. But I had a really beautiful experience recently that moved me beyond words, which is I spoke earlier about my complete devotion to the Distillers,
yeah.
My favorite band. I have two Distillers tattoos, very poorly done. And
you still have those? You still have Sylvia Plath?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, great.
I still have them.
Great,
I didn't get them. When I, recently, I guess like 5 years ago, I was like, oh, I don't want these anymore. And so I went and was like gauging the reaction of people around me. I was like, I'm probably going to get these removed. And they were like, but no.
Right.
The same people who were like, why the fuck would you do that? We're like, why would you care? But you don't, come on.
Right,
like,
right.
Are you really? She's like, okay, whatever. It's also, they're, I'm not going to not get a job because of them now. So.
Right.
But I had a beautiful experience in that one of the Distillers were my favorite band. And as a teenager, I was so angry and I did have trouble connecting to my parents. I mean, they tried really hard. But when I was, let's see, it was 14, it would have been 14 years ago, I would have been 15. The Distillers had just released an album and they were on this tour, which would go on to be their last tour for many, many years. And they were playing at the Bowery Ballroom in New York City. And I bought my tickets months in advance. I was so, so excited. And went with my friends to see them play, and I went to the door and I was refused at the door because I was under 16 and I had many fake IDs, but they had been taken away at that point. And so I called my dad, who was always, he was working a lot. And so he was away a lot. And I called him and he picked up and I said, I was crying. And I said, Dad, like, this is my favorite band. I can't get in. And they say that I need my parent to come and take me in. Can you come and take me? Can you come and let me in? And he came.
Oh my God.
And he took me into the concert and it was the most beautiful. I mean, like, I think about that and I get chills and it was so amazing. And I looked at her up on that stage and it was everything that I wanted to be.
Yeah.
And then they broke up. And I guess right before I went in to the studio to record my album, and I was playing my very last show at that point with the band that I was playing with before, and we were playing the Bowery Ballroom. And I remember standing on that stage, and it was like, I guess it'd be 11 years, almost to the day of when I saw that concert. That concert was in April, and it was almost 11 years to the day, and I remember standing up there and being like, oh my God, I'm standing where she's standing.
Yeah.
And that was such a beautiful full circle thing. And then I forgot again about it. And I went and did my music, went through a whole bunch of horrible shit. And there was this sense of, like, for a while up until almost recently, the sense of, like, sort of shame about my tattoos and shame about this music that I loved so much. And, my obsession with specifically like those records and the Distillers in particular.
Why do you think was there a shame around it?
I don't know. I was not a person full of shame when I was in that age. I think shame was sort of built into me, like when I went to college especially the college that I went to just kind of like hammered shame down your throat. And so I built up this kind of like, oh, that's not cool to like that kind of music. Like I wasn't listening to, I don't know, whatever people think is cool.
So, I'm not sure anymore.
But recently, or I guess it was a few months ago, I was in the car with my band and we were passing around the Spotify or whatever, the thing. And my bass player said, oh, have you heard this song? And I was driving and she put on this song that was on that record that I had gone to see at the Bowery Ballroom. And I got this rush of adrenaline and this like serious, this like insane, like physiological reaction of pure joy and excitement that I actually ran a red light at a four-way intersection and nearly killed everybody. Oh, and I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. But I was like, yes, I know this band. I love this band. I've got two tattoos of this band. Yeah. This band's my favorite band. Like, getting chills thinking about it. And then so beautifully, to finish this story, shortly after that, I began listening to their music again and really began getting into them. And I played a show in the desert in California, and I met some people who were fans of mine. And I don't know what we were communicating. They wrote me on Instagram something, and then they said, oh, when's your next show? I said, I don't know. And they said, oh, well, we're going to see the Distillers this weekend. And I was like, oh my God, they're back together? And it was 14 years since I was 14, since I'd seen them.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, do you want to come with us? And I went with them, and it was the most beautiful. I moshed, and I wept, and I screamed, and I was 14 again. I was so moved for so many reasons because of, like, seeing her. First of all, they were amazing. It was like they'd never left the stage. They played all of the songs as if they'd been playing them for 14 years.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself just how proud my 14-year-old self would be of me now to be doing what I'm doing. And to, in many ways, like, I mean, this sounds like, I don't mean this to sound like an asshole thing at all, but that I was being taken to this concert by people who I was giving to them what she had given to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that was just the most beautiful full circle thing. And part of that, that whole experience has really made me, like, love and embrace the teenager I was.
Yeah.
In a really awesome way.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Beginning this summer, you can listen to new episodes of Inside Pop every other week for an even deeper dive inside the world of pop culture.
Now, we're still bringing you our brilliant insight, always-on-the-nose opinions, and insidery inside information on the most interesting pop culture stories of the week.
And we'll also have interviews with the pop culture professionals who create the culture you crave.
For example, we'll speak to casting directors about how they find the right talent for the right role.
We'll talk to music supervisors about how they choose the music to create the right mood.
And we'll grill producers who'll discuss what exactly a producer does.
Oh man, Sean, how many times has someone said to you, oh, you're a producer, so what do you actually do?
So many times.
Same here. So make sure to catch Inside Pop every other Wednesday on Maximum Fun to indulge your pop culture obsessions.
And to hear in-depth interviews from the movers and the shakers in TV, music, film, and more.
Do you feel like, obviously it is what it is, and we can't change the past yet. I don't know why we're going with that, or if anyone should, if we could. Yeah. But do you feel that time away, whether or not, you now go like, why was I so ashamed? But that rush, you know, that feeling of letting it come back in seems like it could be maybe more powerful than if it had just stayed something that you were like comfortably fond of for those many years in between, you know?
Well, I think it was healing. It was profoundly healing for me because I was a complex teenager of that age in that I was both deeply insecure, as all teenagers are, but also really bold and had like no body image issues, which is amazing. And also very, very sad, but very happy. But I struggled with a lot of pain, and even in the interim, a lot of trauma and pain. And there were traumatic things during that time that I sort of repressed. And embracing that allowed me to, like, sort of bridge this gap in myself to be a full...
Totally get it.
Human and, yeah, and all of that.
Totally get it.
Yeah. And it's fun.
Everything you're saying makes perfect sense to me. I've had experiences that mirror that, absolutely. I want to get into the Smash game in a second, but I did want to ask, just for the sake of pretend completeness, because it's not really possible in an hour, but what were how did kind of romance slash sex slash all of that, was it just like a super messy complex?
I was
kind
a floozy.
Okay.
I was I was all over the high school. I slept with absolutely everybody. And I'm not like that. Again, I just got it all out.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I've basically been monogamous since I was 19.
Yeah.
But I had my first boyfriend when I was in, well, I had an internet boyfriend who we actually knew each other in person, but we chatted on AIM and said we loved each other, but we never touched.
Uh-huh.
And we only saw each other twice in person.
Amazing.
And then my first love was this... he's still my dear friend, Mark, and we dated when we were like 13. I don't even think we dated that long, but it feels like we dated for like 9 years.
Yeah.
And we are still very close, and he's still wonderful. He actually gave me my very first like stage to perform on because he ran the bar at a hookah bar in New York, and that was the first time I ever actually played my own songs. That was two years ago. And then, yeah, it was just like a complete sort of drunken mess and a lot of feelings, a lot of unrequited love, a lot of on both sides.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of was like a guy in that sense. I mean, I ran with boys and that's what it was. And then I had some very, you know, I had very dramatic relationships, as you might imagine. Very dramatic, painful, crushing breakups with people who now I'm just like, oh my God. Like, that's amazing, looking back at the people you really thought that you were going to spend the rest of your life with and you'd never love again. And then you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank God. Yeah, that was me.
Well,
but I'm proud to say, and you can ask anybody in my school, they will tell you the same thing.
Uh-huh.
Did
you have a sense of what other people's like opinions were then, or were you more insular where you weren't necessarily thinking about like the big picture of like what other people would see or think?
I was definitely, you know, I thought about what other people thought, but didn't really care also because that was part of my personality. I mean, I think I was so traumatized by middle school and that then when I like skewed goth, that was like part of it, was the people talking about me. I mean,
I
remember like mean things that people would say about my body or whatever because I wore insanely short skirts and like ridiculous clothes that, you know, I shouldn't have worn just because they were really ugly, but also like they didn't fit well and I like squeezed myself into them. but I'm sure they all called me for what I was, but no, I really wasn't. Like I said, I was deeply insecure, but I was also like at the peak of my confidence.
Yeah.
And I didn't really feel self-conscious in the way that I've struggled with since college when I was in high school. I just kind of like was what I was and it was that was that.
I think you've really hit the nail on the head of that sort of like, because I've talked about this before. And I think it is something that happens to a lot of people at that age, which is that there is this, it truly is like on the eye of a needle. Like, how could I have been that confident and that risk taking and that sort of like, I'm going to wear this because I want to wear this and fuck everybody else. And also be like my most fragile, my most insecure, my most like feelings get hurt whenever, like all that sort of stuff. It's amazing how much those two things could exist together and that I have neither of the extreme of those now.
Yeah.
Like that you would find yourself some back where in the middle is not necessarily what you expect. You would think like, well, when you feel like that, that's your last thing you're thinking about is this, 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 and this, and like having your heart smashed all the time. Like,
sure.
It's so amazing. Those two things can exist together in one person.
It's incredible. I wish that I were more like that one side wearing whatever I wanted and doing all that.
Yeah,
I really do. I miss that element of me a lot.
I think I try to embrace that too, just as a person looking out into the world, to be sort of less judgmental, or to be sort of less like, raise an eyebrow about one thing or another, and just, you know, and just go like, oh, wait, remember when, A, it doesn't matter what you think of that person or what you think their motivation is for wearing that big orange wig or wearing that short skirt or wearing whatever. And like, I've tried to be, I think I've been better about that. Like, just sort of looking around at people and being like, God love you. Like, that is fucking awesome.
It is awesome.
Great. Great. Yeah. Like, do it, please. Do it for all of us.
Yeah.
You know, may we all be like carefree in that way.
Yeah.
You know? All right, let's get into this MASH game.
Okay, cool.
Okay, I'm going to start out with, sort of book related stuff. Since you said you read a lot, I will say three books that you can go into and be in and exist in. You're not reliving the plot. You're not a character in the book. It's just kind of the world that you can sort of step into and be with those characters and stuff. I know. I really, there's a lot of like deep thinking stuff that I give you like 5 seconds to pontificate on. So like, I'm so sorry.
Are these like my favorite book? Like,
honestly, it doesn't even have to be that. It could be like on this day, today, in this moment, what I thought of was blank. And on a different day, I probably wouldn't say that, but this is today.
Oh, well, my Twitter is mostly retweeting Moby Dick.
Great. Great.
So Moby Dick is a big one for me. And, Catch 22 is a big one for me. And wow. Oof, it's so hard. Like I love the Russians, and someone once told me it's impossible that your favorite book is The Brothers Karamazov, and I said, no, that's not true. It definitely is, so I'm gonna say that.
Great.
And I know
Great.
Those are all old white dudes. I'm sorry.
Oh boy. Well, I want this to be a place where you don't have to apologize for your experience of the world as a younger person. And like, you know what I'm saying?
It's hard to... is old, racist, white dudes. I mean, listen. I'm sorry. That's everybody's experience now.
It's a lot.
Thank you.
People's experience. Yes. And that they shaped you, and that you are not that, and that you are a person who's now generating your own stuff. It's kind of hard to say, like, well, that was a mistake. Like, how can you get in the way of that when you're, you know, you became who you are? Okay, great. Next one is three musicians. That could be a composer, singer, songwriter, full band, living or dead, from any era, that it would be great to collaborate with.
Tom Waits.
Right.
Collaboration is so hard because there's so many people that I wouldn't want to screw with their shit.
Right. That's very nice of you to say.
Yeah.
Pretend like it's only gonna get better if it's a collaboration.
I mean, my first thought, the most important record to me was Skip James's Today, so I'll say Skip James.
Great.
And Dolly Parton.
Great. Great. Okay, next one is you can... Now, this is very vague, so I'll let you interpret it as you will. But you can score a film, and it can be as specific as, like, you know you would want to score a film for this director, or you know you would want to score a horror film, or you know you would want to score... Like, it can be as vague or as specific as you want in terms of, like, tone or, you know...
Well, horror film for sure.
Great.
I've worked on a couple of those... with a friend, and he hated doing it, and it was just my dream. So if anybody out there needs a horror film score, I can make it for you in 25 minutes. So that, and then great. Another one?
Yeah.
Like
if there's a director that has a specific style that you think would be fun to kind of play with,
do I see it right there, Blood Meridian?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's so crazy. I looked over, I was thinking about it in my head, and then I looked right at it on your bookshelf. So let's say like a bloody Western, like a bloody surrealist Western.
Great. That is very easy for me to picture you doing a fucking amazing job at. Okay, love it.
But that book, I missed out because that book changed my life for sure.
You can't say you missed out because it still got around to changing your life.
But I mean for my little my little MASH game.
I gotcha.
But amazing how my eye went directly to that. And my eyes are bad, everybody. I have like, what is it, like, I was going to say 20, like 0, 10 vision or something.
I've never known what? Yeah, I don't. I mean, I'm sure it's been explained to me over and over. It's the same thing as when people say, like, you have really good blood pressure.
Yeah.
When I'm at the doctor, and I'm like, oh, really? What is it? And they tell me a number, and I'm like, great. Cool. I'll have to remember that.
Yeah.
Gone. No. Immediately gone.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you should have one more.
Oh. I would love to score a Lifetime film.
Oh my God! Amazing. Ugh.
I would love to do either a Hallmark Christmas film, which I have watched all of this year. Thank you.
Wonderful.
Or, I mean, of course, I love like Baby Snatchers, like those kinds of ones. Yeah. Like, you know.
I've got you locked down for a Lifetime movie score. That's very satisfying. Okay, next category. This is this is one of my faves. It is it can be just like any food that for whatever reason you can't have or you can't eat a lot of because you feel sick or you're allergic to, or you feel like it's, you know, sort of ecologically unsound to do. In this reality, it is there's nothing wrong with any whatever by whatever means you get it and however much you have, there's zero negative ramifications.
Okay. I'm gravely addicted to ice cream, but do not do well with dairy. Luckily technology has made it so that there are beautiful vegan ice creams out there now.
But let's just, we'll crack open ice cream wide open. So any kind. Great.
Just throw that. Beautiful. Throw that there. Yeah.
Beautiful.
I love ice cream so much. I'm a lifelong vegetarian, near vegan, like I said. But I love pizza so much. So, and I have a lot of food intolerances. It sucks. And I completely ignore them.
Girl, you're preaching to the choir. Yeah. Should I put pizza on here?
Yeah, you should put pizza.
Yeah, just pure whatever.
Oh, gosh. And, I mean, those are my two very favorite things. What am I not allowed to have that I love? Well, I guess I can't, I kind of miss beer. Yeah.
I think that's exactly what this is for. Yeah, I was thinking I was going to expand it out because there are definitely times where, like, I just don't have the relationship to drug use that I used to, and I'm totally fine with that. But, like, there are definitely times where I'm like, if I knew I was guaranteed to have a full-on giggle fest getting high, I would do it. But I have to know it is 1,000% guaranteed, and I don't feel like that guarantee exists for me anymore.
Totally.
So, yeah.
I wish I could smoke pot. I smoked pot every single day for 14 years, and then one day woke up and could not smoke pot anymore and haven't touched it since. It makes me... I tried it once, and it was like, oh, my God, I can never make music again. So I stopped.
No one needs that
feeling.
But I
do miss it.
Yeah.
You know, I miss it when people are laughing, and I'm just like, okay, this isn't very
funny. Yeah. Oh, those moments.
But beer, I'm allergic to both the yeast and wheat.
Yeah.
All of you out there, very... It's good for you to know that about me.
If somebody wants to just dose you with a beer and give you terrible gas, like what happens to me, I can't drink beer.
Yeah.
Okay. Next category, let's do a romantic partner. It could be a character from something, a real person from any time, any age that person is. So if you know it's like so-and-so when they were blank years old in the 50s or whatever. And it can just be like sexy times or like lifetime companion, whatever you want.
Oh my God, this one has always been really hard for me. A friend of mine asked this question on Facebook recently, and I was like, I don't know. Because I'm like, ugh.
Well, that's why I'm opening up to be like a one-nighter, because it's you may be like, I'm curious about what it would be like to have sex with this character or person, but I don't need to make the commitment that like they're my fake imaginary true love.
I don't No, this one is so hard because I am so negative. I mean, like, Jesus. Because I'm going around like, oh, no, that person's abusive. Like,
right.
Like that is not.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
God, who would it be?
But that's why I say, like, if it's like a character. Also, if this is just like unpleasant, we could totally skip that character.
Somebody
that particular category.
Funny. Oh, man. This one might be too hard for me.
Okay. All right. We'll
skip
it.
Can we skip this one?
We can skip this one.
Yeah, this one might be too hard.
I think that in and of itself makes for an intriguing MASH answer. The fact that, that we have to move past that.
Yeah, we can't. Which is like, and the whole part of MASH is also that, is this part. Who are you going
to
marry?
I'm always ready for a surprise twist of having to be able to let that go. That's totally cool. What about a fictitious, like, pet as obscure, imaginary, or just as simple as like a hedgehog? Three.
Wow. I have great, I actually came in here waiting to tell you my snake story, which I never got to tell, but I love snakes. I would love a snake.
Yeah. Well, you said you were Slytherin when you were in your
I am state. So Slytherin. I'm 100% Slytherin. And I have not been a good snake keeper in my time.
That's our mysterious snake story.
It's really amazing. It's the best one. And then I guess I would love a large bird of prey.
Great.
A condor.
Great.
And I would love something large. I love horses. So I love riding thing, a giant black, like, Percheron horse, like a huge, monstrous,
great,
hell horse, red eyes.
Perfect. Hell horse.
Yeah.
Love it. Okay, great. Next category, let's do three things that someone else came up with, but in this alternate universe, you are actually responsible for it. So it could be a single work of art. It could be an idea. It could be a building. It could be trains.
Yeah.
Anything. One song. One, what I mean?
That's also,
I know,
really
the wider,
hard.
The harder. The wider, the harder.
I mean, I wish that, I mean, we talked a little bit about, I'm learning some Bob Dylan songs now for a Dylan cover thing. There's a couple of songs in there I wish I'd written.
Great.
I wish I'd written Bob Dylan's catalog.
Great.
I wish I had Brian Wilson's sense of harmony.
Oh, great one. No kidding.
Yeah. And I wish for just a change of pace that I had painted the Garden of Earthly Delights.
Great. Mm-hmm. Okay, final two categories. Next category is a person, a character from any time, fictitious, real, that you would just want to sit and just have like a beer with, or a cup of tea, or just sort of like, you know what? I spent an hour talking to so-and-so and it was fascinating.
Oh, I should have been more prepared for this.
Girl, there's no preparing for MASH. I know, it's very cruel. It's a very cruel game.
But who's fascinating? Oh, Kurt Vonnegut.
Ugh, agreed.
I actually did get to meet him once when I was very small, and he was amazing. But Kurt Vonnegut for sure. And she kind of, what's
I draw blanks all the time, by the way. Mostly of the people
so
I should know,
because
most,
I can picture everything. I've got a story about her coming into a room and going, does anybody want their dick sucked, boys?
It's not Mae West?
Yes.
Okay, great. It's Mae West. That is a person out of time, where you're like, oh, did aliens just drop like a different type of human back into the world for everyone to go like, whoa, hey, let's pay attention, what's happening?
I mean, she's amazing.
Yeah.
That one would be really good. And then I guess similarly, well, I mean I like to laugh a lot. I've always found W.C. Fields to be pretty funny.
So nice.
I'll do that because they're two in one.
It's such a different, I mean, it just feels, it's funny because we live in a time of, and this is, by the way, going to be like the most like pedantic, gross, but also like very sophomoric observation that people have made a million times before me. But it is amazing that we live in a time of Twitter where everything is just like these little bite-sized like bon mot. But because there's such a sort of proliferation of it and there's just like so much of it all the time, it's so interesting that like still you but like looking back at like the Oscar Wildes and the Mae West and the W.C. Fields who just have these like perfect sentences where you're like, God, that's goddamn good. Fuck.
Yeah.
You know,
I feel like Oscar Wilde is on every single person's like dream dinner party.
I mean, yeah. Like he just, what, how is he?
I mean, I regretted saying it, but I was like, also like, you know, that's everybody.
Listen,
answer.
We still covered it. We still covered it. He was bound to be brought up by one or the other.
I didn't say like Gandhi or something.
That's not, maybe you'd say it tomorrow. Who cares? Yeah. Also, who cares if you never say it? I wouldn't know how to have a conversation with someone who's sort of living in a different way of seeing the entire world.
Yeah.
But also like aren't there just a million people who have done like worldwide good that then their family, their immediate family members are like, "Oh yeah, he's a terrible
person."
Totally
asshole. Yeah, I mean, that's what
there's
I
think about, a like, weird thing that
I got stuff
happens.
About Gandhi I won't talk about.
Yeah. But, well, there you go. See? Yeah. Listen, I'm right on board. Okay, and then final category would be you have a special door in your home that you can walk through and it goes to anywhere. It could go to a different place on this planet. It could go to an imaginary place. It could go to a gym, like your own sewing room, as banal or as magical as you want. Secret door.
Funnily enough, one of those doors that I told you that I dewired when I was a kid was the fire exit for our house because we lived in an apartment building and it was through a closet. And so we called it Narnia.
Satisfying.
And that was my exit out into the world that I wanted to be in, which was the dirty, nasty streets of New York City. So,
yep,
that's perfect.
Yep.
I would say I'd love to be able to just walk out of my door and be in the middle of like the rainforest in Washington.
Great.
That's pretty amazing.
No kidding.
I'd love a really nice beach.
Great.
Don't really care where, as long as the swimming is good, and there are big waves.
Great.
And the water's, you know, temperate.
Yes.
And then, yeah, I do like the gym. I'd like a gym, like a really well-appointed gym.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Fantastic. Okay, tell me when to stop. This is just for me to get my little thing that then allows me. Yep. Okay, tell me when to stop.
Okay.
Okay. Now, here's what I'd like to do. Normally, I would pause this and I would come back with our results. What my suggestion would be to you is, could you tell your snake story?
Oh, yes.
While I'm doing my calculations.
Yep. So,
okay, so here we
go. I've always wanted a snake my whole life. My mom said I couldn't get a snake because if I got a snake, I'd put it in her bed, which is ridiculous because if I got a snake and put it in her bed, she'd take it away from me.
Right.
So obviously I would never do that.
Was really it just an excuse because she just did not want a snake?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
She's terrified of them.
Yeah.
But so I made a friend who's still one of my very best friends. His name is Matt. And we sort of had been hanging out a little bit, but then we wanted to like consummate our friendship. And we decided the best way to do it would be to go to the Tri-State Snake Expo.
Oh, there's a Tri-State Snake Expo.
Oh, yeah, it still goes on. It's amazing.
Tri-State.
I actually went back a few years later, had a very similar thing happen. But so we got on the train, and we went up to Westchester, to White Plains, from the city, to go to the Tri-State Snake Expo together. And it was the Sunday before the first day of school. He's 1 year older than me. He was going into his senior year. I was going to my junior year of college. High school.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get to the Tri-State Snake Expo. It is a wonder world. And we both fall in love with these brother and sister snakes. They are baby ball pythons.
Okay.
And they come in these little plastic tubs. And so we decide they're like $15. And we decide we're going to get them. And we're so pumped about them. He named his Annabelle. I named mine King Solomon.
Uh-huh.
And we... It was really exciting because then we got back on the train and then we were playing with them and it was right as Snakes on a Plane came out. So we had Snakes on a Train and people were freaking out. And so then we go home and we're like, it was too expensive to buy all the snake gear for them at the Tri-State Snake Expo. So we made a date for the next day right after school to go to the snake, to the Petland discounts and get ourselves little terrariums and the stuff for our snake. And snakes are very hardy, so they can, they, he could like be happy in the like little container that I made in my bedroom overnight. And so the next day, so I smuggle my snake into my house. And then it's, the next day is the first day of school. And I'm thinking to myself, should I leave the snake at home? My mom's probably going to find it.
Yeah.
And it's not in a good spot. So I'm going to take the snake to school and I'll just put it in my locker or carry it around in my backpack. And we had a have a family friend named Pedro who would like on like certain special days, like help us out and like take drive me to school or like drive my mom places because obviously we didn't have a car. It was in the city. And so he picked me up at my house and then we went and we did like a carpool with my best friend and we went down and picked up my best friend. And we were driving down the FDR and I like pulled out my snake and I was like, yo, like check out what I got.
King Solomon.
King Solomon. And she was like, oh my God. And I was like showing it, like playing with it secretly. And like Pedro's in the front seat. And then my mom is also there. And I'm like playing around with it. And I feel it like makes a move and it jumps and it slips down into the seatbelt hole and I've got it by the tail and then I feel it trying to pull and I didn't want to hurt it. So I just let it go.
Right.
So then I'm like, holy fuck. Holy shit. And I said,
guys,
there may or may not be a python loose in this car right now. And they were like, what? And they didn't believe me. Oh, and then I was like, no, actually, here's the deal. I got a snake. It just got loose in the car.
Yeah.
And so we went to school. I felt devastated. They flipped the fuck out, as you can imagine. I mean, my mom was going insane. Pedro was going insane. They took it to, they couldn't find it. They took it to the shop. And this has happened to friends of mine with snakes before where they get into the car. And they like took apart the whole car. And could not find the snake. It was not, they couldn't find it anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So meanwhile, I go to school. Matt starts texting me, hey, let's go meet up for Petland discounts. I do not text him back.
Oh, God.
I go about a month and a half before texting him back. And then finally tell him I lost King Solomon.
On day one.
Day one.
Day two, I guess.
Day two. Now, a couple months later, the window stopped working in the car.
Oh, no.
So for years, I had this guilt. Oh, my God. King Solomon was dead in the car, crushed in the window. I have carried this guilt for 10 years. Well, yeah, 10 years. Then I find out about a year and a half ago, I'm in my family kitchen, and my essentially my grandmother's grandmother figure to me is in the kitchen and I'm telling the story of King Solomon and I'm like, yeah. And then the window in the car wouldn't go down. And I think we lost him. And she was like, Oh no, we found him.
Oh!
And I was like, what? And she was like, yeah, we just didn't want to tell you because we knew that you'd want him back. And evidently what happened was 3 years later, Pedro was big in is big in the community of his local Jehovah's Witness church group, and would drive the kids around to the Sunday or the Saturday school, Saturday Sunday whatever they the to the church group for the kids on the weekend.
Oh God!
And he went to pick up the first child and his mother. They opened up the back seat. And in the footwell was a 6-foot python. And they flipped out and he called his brother who had a friend who was a snake wrangler who came and got King Solomon, who to this day now lives in a beautiful terrarium in Astoria in Queens. But they didn't tell me. And I carried that guilt for my whole life that I had killed that being that
oh
I loved.
Oh my God.
But yeah, they knew that I'd be like, okay, great. Give me my snake back.
Yeah, yeah,
thanks.
Yeah.
But it lived a wonderful 3 years.
Do you think it was like ratting and mousing? Like it just,
totally.
Its home was the car. Okay, it so it would slither car, out, slither go out, catch some rodents.
Yep. Yeah. That's and then that also happened story. To me again the next time I went to the Tri-State Snake Expo. So I don't do that anymore.
Yeah. Oh my God. This is like a, it's like a dark children's book by Edward Gorey. It makes me very happy.
I love him.
Okay. Let me give you the results of your 100% guaranteed fictitious MASH future slash alternate universe life. I feel very, very good about the things that you ended up with.
Great.
First, I want to congratulate you on, I like the sort of weird imagery of this, but your apartment inside the Brothers Karamazov.
Oh, that's great. There's a lot of those.
There you go.
They have a lot of tiny apartments. You could be,
little garret. So that is one place that you can escape into. You also have, of course, your secret door that takes you to a beautiful rainforest in Washington. Amazing. Or thereabouts. You have been responsible for the rich tapestry of work that is not an actual tapestry, The Garden of Earthly Delights.
Great. That makes sense.
There's a lot going on in that. You have collaborated with Skip James and sort of in terms of coming back full circle to also something that was life-changing for you. All of this activity, by the way, is making you very hungry. I want you to rest assured you can have unlimited amounts of ice cream of any kind, any makeup.
Thank you. That was the universe.
Definitely ended up with that. You also have scored a horror film.
Good. That's
so
really
that's another big one to cross out. Yeah, there you go. You have hung out with Mr. Kurt Vonnegut.
Great.
I'm very excited. I think I'm going to piggyback onto that hangout.
Yeah.
And I did not do this on purpose. This is just the universe, but you do have an unlimited amount of snakes.
Oh, fantastic.
To make up
another
for the trauma
all
that you
loose in your
through.
House.
They're all loose in the
They're
house.
They're all up in these walls.
They're all up in the walls. I do like snakes also. I don't have that thing about snakes that some people do. I don't have it about rodents. I think I have it about bugs. Like pretty much bugs is, that's what kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies.
I love them all except for like lice. I don't like lice, but otherwise, like, I don't care about cockroaches.
Yeah. I think I had too many spider and cockroach scares as a kid.
Yeah.
You know what? It didn't take much. Thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Where would you like to direct people to enjoy your music and or anything else?
You can enjoy my music online or in hard copy. Online on the Spotifys and the iTunes. It's
Indeed.
Vera Sola, V-E-R-A-S-O-L-A. It means very shitty in the Roman dialect of Italian. Or you can find me on the Instagram. So I do a lot of stuff on there, at vera.sola. There's also verasola.com. I did that wrong. And then Facebook and all of that. I'm terrible at Twitter. If you want to be one of like 40 Twitter followers who read about retweets of Moby Dick, go there. I retweeted a great one this morning.
So many choices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's that. You can, I'm easily found.
Fantastic.
I'm a modern woman.
You're a modern woman. You're a class act. We got some fabulous MASH answers. Thank you for spending this cloudy afternoon with me. It's been a joy.
Oh, it's been wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
And guys, I'll talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.